This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. We present Jill Bevilacqua's program, There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye. Let's listen.
This is how the birth of Jesus Christ came about. When his mother Mary was engaged to Joseph, but before they lived together, she was found with child through the power of the Holy Spirit. Joseph, her husband, an upright man unwilling to expose her to the law, decided to divorce her quietly. Such was his intention, when suddenly the angel of the Lord appeared in a dream and said to him, "Joseph, son of David, have no fear about taking Mary as your wife. It is by the Holy Spirit that she has conceived this child. She is to have a son, and you are to name him Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." All this happened to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet, "The virgin shall be with child and give birth to a son, and they shall call him Emmanuel, a name which means God is with us." When Joseph awoke, he did as the angel of the Lord had directed him and received her into his home as his wife.
Anyone opening St. Matthew's Gospel for the first time and finding what is apparently a list of names might be forgiven for closing it again and muttering disappointedly, "I thought it was supposed to be a story." I remember myself listening to the old translation with, "Abraham begot Isaac, and Isaac begot Jacob, and Jacob begot..." And so it went on. And by the time we'd got to the end, which was the most important part, no one was listening anymore. But Matthew was a legal man, not a storyteller. And so, before he plunges into the narrative, he wants to make sure we get the background right. So he shows us the descent of Joseph, the legal father of Jesus, from Abraham and David, to whom the messianic promises were made. The very first verse in today's translation reads, "A genealogy of Jesus Christ, son of David, son of Abraham." The Hebrews took no notice of women in their genealogies, and the evangelist conforms to this custom by giving us only Joseph's pedigree while ignoring Mary's. But, we read in a note, "as they were near akin, the pedigree of the one showed that of the other." And not only were they akin in blood, but also in the mystery in which they were called to share, writes Carlo Carretto.
Of all the men and women who lived by faith, two reached towering heights. They lived at the watershed between the Old and New Testaments and were called by God to such a unique and magnificent vocation that heaven was made to wait in suspense for their reply. Mary and Joseph. Mary became the mother of the Word. She gave flesh and blood to the Son of God, and Joseph must veil the mystery, placing himself at her side so that everyone might believe that Jesus was his son. For these two creatures, the night of faith was not only dark, but also painful. One day, Joseph, engaged to Mary, realizes that she is to give birth to a child which he knows is not his. Think of the task of convincing one's betrothed that the mystery of that birth is due to nothing less than the power of God. No reasoning could give Joseph peace and serenity, only faith. And it's precisely this faith which sustained him, placing him next to the Mother of God to accompany her in her destiny and take a full part in her mission.
Today's Gospel used to be read on Christmas Eve, Vigil of the Nativity, and also on the Feast of Joseph, the 19th of March. It's still read on that day, but with the addition of one verse which precedes the rest. It's the last line of Matthew's genealogy.
"Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Of her was born Jesus, who is called Christ."
And so, having made sure we know exactly who begat whom, Matthew finally lets us into the secret of how it all came about. None of the other evangelists recounts the episode in which the protagonist is Joseph. But Matthew, being an Israelite and a man familiar with the law, gives us all the legal details of the relationship between Mary and Joseph. Mary was engaged to Joseph, he writes, but before they lived together, she was found with child through the power of the Holy Spirit. Joseph, however, did not know this yet. He was her husband, because for the Jews an engagement or betrothal was marriage, although the couple did not live together for a year. If the man wished to release himself from the engagement, he had to make an act of repudiation. But Joseph was an upright man, we read, a man of honour, or in the more familiar description, a just man. A man who, though he knew the law, would not use it to his own advantage if at the same time it would bring shame on his bride. We're not told how Joseph learnt of Mary's pregnancy. We know she went to Judea immediately after the Annunciation to be with her cousin Elizabeth and was away 3 months. Sometime after her return to Nazareth, it would have been evident that she was expecting a child. As a modern writer comments,
the women of Nazareth would have noticed, and they would instantly have told their husbands. Did one of the husbands remark on it to Joseph? Whoever told him, we can feel sure that Joseph received the news in silence. He was a silent man. And in any event, what could he say? Why had Mary not told Joseph herself? We don't know. Would she, in any event, have found it so simple to tell him? She may well have felt it was for God to tell Joseph, as he had told herself.
Over the centuries, the role of Joseph in this extraordinary happening has been studied and discussed ad infinitum. But not a word of his has ever been reported. We don't know how he felt, what he thought, how he reacted to the fact of Mary's unexpected and inexplicable pregnancy. Nor did he take any action until after the visit of the angel in a dream. Various popes have given prominence to Joseph in one way or another, so as to honour him and draw attention to his virtues and relevance for Christians. Pius IX proclaimed him patron of the Universal Church. Leo XIII published an encyclical on him. Pius X gave him a litany. Benedict XV approved a proper preface for his feast and extended it to the whole church. And Pius XII instituted the Feast of St. Joseph Workman for May the 1st. But Joseph remains obstinately in the shadows. And where there is no definite information, legends and apocryphal writings spring up. Like the cherry tree carol, which suggests that Joseph was not so tender with his young bride. It is, of course, only a fantasy. But it makes him a little less remote, a little more human, more credible, perhaps. Here are the words as printed in the Oxford Book of Carols. The author being unknown, it's labelled traditional.
Joseph was an old man, and an old man was he when he wedded Mary in the land of Galilee. Joseph and Mary walked through an orchard good, where was cherries and berries so red as any blood. Joseph and Mary walked through an orchard green, where was berries and cherries as thick as might be seen. Oh, then bespoke Mary, so meek and so mild, pluck me one cherry, Joseph, for I am with child. Oh, then bespoke Joseph with words so unkind, let him pluck thee a cherry that brought thee with child. Oh, then bespoke the babe within his mother's womb, bow down then the tallest tree for my mother to have some. Then bowed down the highest tree unto his mother's hand. Then she cried, see, Joseph, I have cherries at command. Oh, then bespoke Joseph, I have done Mary wrong, but cheer up, my dearest, and be not cast down. Oh, eat your cherries, Mary, oh, eat your cherries now, oh, eat your cherries, Mary, that grow upon the bough. Then Mary plucked a cherry as red as the blood. Then Mary went home with her heavy load.
The Middle Ages is always presented to us as a time of faith, a pious, God-fearing time. But the same legend appears in the Coventry Mystery Plays, with a similarly sharp dialogue, Joseph demanding of Mary, tell me, woman, whose is this child? But then the angel intervenes and all is put right, and Joseph asks Mary's pardon for doubting her word. And in a recent recording of the Cherry Tree Carol, someone has put the record right. For instead of the unkind retort to Mary's plea, Joseph says, go to the tree then, Mary, and it shall bow to thee, and you shall gather cherries by one, by two, by three. So let's listen.
Joseph was an old man, and an old man was he.
If we pause for just a moment to reflect, it seems obvious that Joseph must have been aware of the extraordinary beauty of Mary's soul. As a modern writer puts it, a saint of his greatness would never have failed to recognise a saint of her uniqueness. The mystery of her conceiving was still utterly beyond him, but at least it seemed to mean that God had some special design for her, a design in which he was not included. If so, he would have been ending the marriage solely in order to set her free for whatever God's design might be. The speculation about Joseph will go on, but we've been given the essential information. We know that the angel set Joseph's mind at rest and imparted to him the sensational news, and Joseph did as the angel of the Lord directed him. And let's close now with a simple poem in praise of Joseph by modern writer Gilbert Thomas.
Who has not carolled Mary, and who her praise would dim? But what of humble Joseph? Is there no song for him? If Joseph had not driven straight nails through honest wood, if Joseph had not cherished his Mary as he should, if Joseph had not proved him a sire both kind and wise, would he have drawn with favour the child's all-probing eyes? Would Christ have prayed, Our Father, or cried that name in death, unless he first had honoured Joseph of Nazareth?